You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, February 13th, 2017.
So often people don't ask a child, how do you feel about your gender? What do you want to be wearing? What do you want to play with? Who do you want to date? And they're assumed to be cisgender, they're assumed to be straight. And it's a really empowering question.
Sam Harrell with Midway House talks about the challenges and health risks facing LGBTQ youth in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear about volunteer opportunities for teens. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Trace levels of lead have been discovered in the soil at the site of a former water tank owned by the City of Bloomington Utilities. According to a press release from the City of Bloomington, these levels were higher than what is allowed by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. The tank was in use from 1954 to 2015, when before it was dismantled and taken out of the area. The high traces of lead were found when employees were conducting routine soil samplings of the site to see if it could possibly be reused in the near future. According to the press release, city officials believe the contamination is likely due to sandblasting of lead paint that occurred for decades on the exterior of the former tank. Sandblasting to prepare for repainting was not unusual for tanks of its era. The soil samples showed lead levels ranging from 50.7 to 1,530 milligrams per kilogram. The IDEM limit for residential areas is 400 milligrams per kilogram. If left undisturbed, the press release states the contaminated soil poses no threat to residents, but the soil will soon be removed and disposed of according to IDEM protocols. New soil will be brought in to replace it. The CBU owns four other water tanks that were constructed before the banning of lead paint in 1978. Soil samples will take place at each of these sites, and remediation efforts will take place if needed.
Indiana transportation officials have announced yet another change to the Interstate 69 construction schedule. In today's announcement, the Indiana Finance Authority and the Indiana Department of Transportation said they expect Section 5 of the interstate to be completed by May of 2018. That's 7 months later than the date they announced in December, but it's also 3 months earlier than the date they announced last month. Section 5 extends from Bloomington to Martinsville. The delays come after funding problems and disputes with contractors from last year. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton issued a statement this afternoon saying he hopes this will be the final announcement about a construction delay. Hamilton said, quote, "Another delay means for us another winter and spring of difficult travel, lost productivity, and danger," unquote. Today's statement is only the most recent in a line of similar announcements. When the state first signed a contract with the private companies responsible for building the road, the project was projected to be finished by the end of 2016.
The City of Bloomington hired an interim director of planning and transportation this afternoon, just more than 2 weeks after the departure of the former director. The new hire, Frank Sabatine, worked most recently as an associate provost at Ball State University. His position at Ball State was focused on economic development, according to a university statement released when he was hired there. Sabatine has also worked in administrative positions within the state government. He was once the business development director at the Indiana Department of Commerce, as well as the commissioner of the Indiana State Board of Tax Commissioners. It's unclear if Sabatine has work experience or education related to planning and transportation, which is the focus of his new job. The city's communications director, Mary Catherine Carmichael, said this afternoon that she was not ready to comment about Sabatine's hire, and Sabatine has not responded to a call for comment from WFHB. Carmichael also said she did not know the new director's salary. That information is expected to be announced tomorrow. Sabatine is stepping into a position vacated last month by Christy Langley, who worked at the job for just 10 months before announcing her departure. Sabatine's hire is temporary. The city is conducting a national search for a permanent director of planning and transportation.
Last week, Indiana Commissioner for Higher Education Teresa Lubbers delivered her State of Higher Education address. The focus of her fifth annual address was on improving preparedness for the future. One of Lubbers' goals is for 60% of Hoosier adults to earn an education beyond high school by 2025. Kaylee Showers, the communications project manager at the Commission for Higher Education, spoke with WFHB about that goal.
We know based on projections for careers in the state that by 2025, in order to fill all of those, the jobs that we will have, we'll need 60% of Hoosiers will need some kind of education beyond high school to kind of fit those career demands and workforce needs.
You Can Go Back is a program the Commission started about a year ago. It encourages adult Hoosiers who started but have not completed a degree to re-enroll in college. Shower said educating adult Hoosiers will benefit the state as a whole.
If we don't have enough qualified Hoosiers to fill the workforce demands, our economy is going to suffer, right? So no one wants that. It's kind of our charge with the commission to make sure that as many folks as possible are getting some education beyond high school. Now, that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't have to be a bachelor's or, a four-year degree. We need to look at associate degrees, which we have been doing, and then also workforce or short-term certificates. That's a way that maybe a student who doesn't need to go to college for 4 years can get some kind of, training in a field that will make them eligible for, these job openings of the future, right? So it's kind of really looking at all of the different aspects of education beyond high school and seeing, how we can skill up our current workforce.
The You Can Go Back program reportedly helped encourage 9,000 students to re-enroll in college in the past year.
Last month, Governor Eric Holcomb submitted Indiana's application to the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, asking for continued support in developing the Healthy Indiana Plan. The application also asks for more access to substance abuse disorder services. The plan, known as HIP, began in 2008 to provide health insurance for low-income, non-disabled Hoosiers ages 19 to 64. An improved version of the plan, called HIP 2.0, began on February 1, 2015. Joe Moser, the Medicaid director for the state of Indiana, said that many Hoosiers depend on HIP 2.0.
Right now we have a little more than 400,000 enrollees in the program, and it's provide health coverage to those individuals, many of which otherwise wouldn't have had a source of health insurance, affordable health insurance. And it served them through an alternative Medicaid model that is a consumer-driven healthcare model that engages them in their own healthcare and results in better outcomes than traditional Medicaid.
HIP 2.0 expires in January 31, 2018, but approval of Governor Holcomb's application would extend that by 3 years. The application focuses on increased services for people with substance use disorders.
It would expand coverage for inpatient detox services for hospitals that today are prohibited from providing Medicaid services to individuals. It would expand residential treatment services in the state, which is a step in the continuum of care for addiction services that we currently don't cover today. And it would provide addiction recovery support services, including peer recovery supports and housing support services. recovery focused case management and relapse prevention services.
The Substance Use Disorder Services Initiative is an effort to address Indiana's chronic opioid epidemic. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Maria McKinley. According to the Centers for Disease Control, LGBTQ high school students experience higher rates of certain health risks than heterosexual youth. Specifically, 34% of LGBTQ report being bullied at school, as opposed to 15% of heterosexual teens. 23% report experiencing sexual violence while dating, compared to 9% of hetero teens. LGBTQ youth are 5 times more likely to use illegal drugs than their heterosexual peers, and they're 40% more likely to attempt suicide. Sam Harrell is a county services specialist with Middleway House and an adult leader with PRISM Youth Community, an all-inclusive group offering social support for LGBTQ youth. Harrell and the Indiana Youth Institute are partners in a training session in Spencer this week to help adults who work with LGBTQ youth better understand the challenges faced by that population. Reporter Sarah Vaughn spoke with Harrell to get a better sense of those challenges, as well as resources allies can use.
How are the teen years particularly hard for LGBTQ youth?
LGBTQ youth struggle a lot with isolation, access to information, access to appropriate and competent mental health care and medical care, and then also just finding safe ways to explore their identity and what it means to them, whether that be dating, making changes to the gender expression, right, getting the schools or their friends to work with them to accept and celebrate changes to names, to appearances, to pronouns. So often people don't ask a child, how do you feel about your gender? What do you want to be wearing? What do you want to play with? Who do you want to date? And they're assumed to be cisgender. They're assumed to be straight. And it's a really empowering question. One thing that we hear a lot from youth is that this question about whether or not children or youth can actually know that they are LGBTQ, at a really early age, they are faced with feeling different from all the dominant messaging that they're receiving. It becomes really apparent that something feels different, and it's hard to really explore that when we don't give them the words to name it.
Can you explain some of the terminology that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth might use to describe themselves?
One thing to know is that it's changing, and words are being added, and words are being taken away, and words are being reclaimed. So if we break it down into gender identity, biological sex, gender expression, and sexual and romantic orientation, we might have orientations like pansexual, bisexual, gay, straight, queer. Gender identity, we might have male, female, trans, male, gender, queer, demigirl, demiboy. Some words that are more familiar, some words that people have never heard of. And again, the meanings will change. So having a general understanding, getting used to asking those open-ended questions of what does this term mean to you, what words do you want me to use, and not making assumptions.
So this issue of pronouns hangs up a lot of folks who aren't connected to the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. There might be some variance in opinion on this, but if you do not know someone's pronouns and you don't have an opportunity to ask before referencing them, 2 recommendations. One is if you know their name, use their name. And if you don't know their name, use gender-neutral pronouns. Singular say is a grammatically correct pronoun that people use naturally all the time, right? When you're referring to somebody you don't know, like, oh, the mailman came, they left you a package. That's a singular use of the they pronoun. I would like to recommend that people use that for anyone they don't know. Being misgendered, especially if it happens consistently, and knowing that people around you aren't taking the time to understand or ask, get to know about your gender identity, your relationship to gender, and just putting you in a box can really inhibit your ability to live in a lot of ways. It can distract you from learning. It can distract you from a therapeutic process, from accessing a social service, from enjoying a movie or a friend group. And that's one of those experiences that cisgender people just don't encounter very often. So I understand why it might be a little bit of an empathy struggle to try to understand what that could be like to be constantly misgendered but it's having really damaging, painful effects on youth and adults who are transgender or gender nonconforming.
Can you explain a little more how misgender identification is an obstacle in an educational setting?
If you imagine like a seventh grade boy who is transgender, it could be the case where he's a transgender boy, he uses he pronouns. Maybe he is lucky enough to have a supportive family member that lets him wear masculine clothing. Maybe not. Maybe he doesn't have a supportive family. Maybe he's still coming to school wearing a very feminine gender expression. Regardless, you have a boy who is in a classroom who has been brave enough, let's say, for example, to tell a teacher, I use he pronouns. This is my name. And I would like you to call me by he, him, his pronouns in the classroom. And then if that teacher repeatedly, and it's even if it's an accident, malicious or not, if that teacher continues to use she pronouns because that's what the teacher sees on the roster or in the school profile, or that's what the teacher called the kid last year, every time that happens, that kid's identity is being invalidated, and that kid is being told that he can't decide how he feels about himself or his body, that he doesn't have that right. And it's creating an environment where all the kids in the classroom are seeing an authority figure ignore that child's right to their own understanding of their gender. And those kids are less likely to gender that kid correctly, too. And it creates a distracting learning environment where all these feelings, and I can personally identify with this, all of these feelings of feeling nervous or anxious or embarrassed or exhausted, invalidated, sad, are in your head when you're just trying to learn a simple math lesson. Mm-hmm. And it's constantly happening. And we need teachers to take it seriously. We need counselors to take it seriously, and social workers and therapists and parents and church leaders. Because it's a quiet problem that's happening.
I read that a survey for the Centers for Disease Control found that LGBTQ youth are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their straight peers. Besides being at risk for suicide, what are some other health risks associated with LGBTQ youth?
Almost every adverse child experience or health risk is present. So they're at higher risk for drug abuse and alcohol abuse, higher risk for depression, higher risk for homelessness and housing insecurity, higher risk for unemployment as they become young adults.
Can I circle back around to this statistic about LGBTQ youth being at a higher risk for suicide? That's just so troubling. So I'm wondering, you know, besides obviously calling 911, what should the average person do if they're not a trained social worker, if you find yourself in a situation with a suicidal LGBTQ teen or any teen? Can you give us an approach to take or some phrases that would be helpful or comforting?
We want to make sure that if we're referring them to emergency services, we're referring them to competent ones. So, for example, if referring them to a suicide line, go ahead and refer them to an LGBTQ suicide line. So the best one for LGBTQ youth is going to be the Trevor line on the Trevor Project. So we know that whoever they talk to on that phone is going to honor and respect their identity. Similarly, particularly with trans youth, if at all possible, if a trans youth is going to be sent to a hospital, we need to do our best to make sure that those doctors and nurses all know that youth's preferred name and pronouns. It is incredibly traumatizing or re-traumatizing for a trans youth or any queer person to go to a medical facility, particularly in a crisis situation, and have their dead name, the name that they do not use, that they were assigned, or their dead pronouns, the pronouns they do not use, being used over and over again. So those are additional considerations that we might not have for cisgender, heterosexual people. There are a lot of really good resources online for screens, for some basic questions to ask people where you can assess, you know, their likelihood to commit suicide, their access to tools or weapons, their plan, the likelihood to carry it out, their resources. But ultimately, you want to assess the risk either by, you know, calling a professional, calling a hotline, or using a accredited tool, and then try to give youth choices while also ensuring that they get to safety. You know, do you want me to take you to the hospital, or do you want me to call an ambulance? Do you want them to use your preferred name or this name? Who do you want to know, et cetera? You know, a part of a suicidal experience is being in an act of desperation and not feeling like you have options.
Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like the listeners to know?
I would love to just let people know about PRISM youth community if they don't already know. It's an LGBTQ support group for youth ages 12 to 20. It is based in Bloomington, but they welcome youth from anywhere. They meet every Tuesday at the Unitarian Universalist Church from 6:30 to 8, and they meet Thursdays at Hopscotch Coffee from 7 to 9. So Prism Youth Community is a wonderful organization to check out, either to refer an LGBTQ youth to, and they also accept allies in their space, or to just help donate to and get involved.
That was Sam Harrell from Middleway House speaking with reporter Sarah Vaughn. You can find links to the Trevor Project, Prism Youth Community, and the accredited suicide assessment tools Harrell spoke of on our website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet voice and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
My name is Kevin McDowell, and I'm the Teen Services and Digital Creativity Strategist at the Monroe County Public Library, and it is my job to oversee the two exciting new spaces of the library, the Teen Space, we call it the Ground Floor, and the Digital Creativity Center, which we call Level Up.
And I'm Avery Smith.
And I'm Sophia Bender, and we are volunteers at the Ground Floor Teen Space.
The mission of the space is to create a creative third space for teens to go that's not home, it's not the school, and they can hang out there and socialize with one another, explore technology, and be creative generally. Something I've seen that surprised me about the teen space was the way that teens that normally we might think of as being in different groups, social groups, they mingle kind of seamlessly all with one another. There aren't those divisions of art kids and the cosplay kids. They are one and the other, and they go back and forth. The other thing is the teens are themselves the creators of that community. It's not really a librarian or an adult telling them what to do or how to behave or trying to artificially create some community. The teens really create that sense of knowing one another, watching out for one another, and also telling each other to step off if something doesn't feel right. They do that themselves. Students from any school or homeschool are welcome to come there, and there's art stuff and video games that you can check out and computers and iPads that you can check out, places to hang out. There's actually books also.
It is a library.
It is a library still.
But it is a space for hanging out, but it's also a space for messing around and geeking out. That's sort of our mantra, is hanging out, messing around, and geeking out. So the volunteer mentor program is open to folks in the community. Very few hoops to jump through. You have to be 20 years or older. You have to have not be afraid of teens. Loving them and really digging them is even better. We're really trying to get people in the community that have some sort of a specialty skill set, not just in digital creativity, although that's great, you know. So maybe you're a musician or an artist or a programmer or run your own business. We want kids to meet individuals in the community older than them that have specialized skills that they've put into use in somehow. So they are mentoring the kids with, how did I get here? How did I get to the point where I've mastered this skill? It's because I, too, became interested in something and started messing around and then geeked out on it for a long time till, lo and behold, either somebody offered me a job or I created my own work for myself. We want our teens to meet people like that and to spend time with them.
I'm Avery.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Kevin. And
thanks for listening.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to volunteer with or as a teen. The Monroe County Public Library is looking for volunteers to mentor teens in its newest spaces, the ground floor and level up. Mentors will hang out, mess around, and geek out with local teens, assisting, encouraging, and motivating them in projects that teach 21st century literacy skills. If you're a teen looking for opportunities in the community, you may consider the Bloomington Community Bike Project, a local cooperative that helps people recycle bikes for those who need them. Teens are welcome to volunteer at the shop with all tasks, including bike repair and shop organization. Or check out the Community Kitchen at serving time and learn more about food programs in Monroe County. The teen-friendly serving shift is from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Anyone age 14 and older may volunteer, and those age 10 through 13 may volunteer if accompanied by an adult. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sheila Raghavendran, Joe Crawford, and Jade Schoppel. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.